Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. I'm Andy Rowan, Big Jim and Goody are with me as usual. We're going to take a look back at the epic weekend of Premiership semi-finals, and we'll be looking ahead to England and the British and Irish Lions getting their summers underway. Plus, we'll be speaking to Quins coach Nick Evans about the big comeback and how his club has turned things around. So make sure you've subscribed, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles, from executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
It's a massive week for us as we're hosting our first live show in 18 months at the Clapham Grand on Wednesday. We've got a Lions tourist from the 2009 tour to South Africa joining us, and you can watch it from anywhere in the world live or on demand for 48 hours if you register at dice.fm. If you're in the UK and you didn't manage to get a ticket, you can also stream it and get a case of 8 free beers from Beer 52 by signing up to their subscription service at beer52.com with the code RUGBYPOD. It's going to be a cracking night, so make sure you get involved.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. Of course I am. I can't wait. I'm so excited. And I've got my little black book out and I've made notes about the games which we can go through. And at the bottom, I've put travel question mark. I've still not booked my travel. Just in case something happens and it got called off and I didn't want to get too excited, and I'm going to book my travel. It's Monday, podcast out on Tuesday. Lads, I'm coming home.
Oh, you're coming home. So you're English then, Jim, now, are you? Because we had this debate over the football on Friday, and you on the phone, you said to me you were supporting England because you're English, but then you say something different on Twitter with it, being a Scottish fan, do you?
Did I say that? Well, you also texted me saying that you hope Bristol's put 50 points on Quins, but let's not go through our personal conversations. I mean, I'm coming home as in, like, I'm coming home as in on stage. That's what I mean.
Okay, okay. Yeah. I'll be honest, I ain't looking forward to it after the weekend I've had. You know, when you're like giddy and then you go out on Saturday night, and we had a lovely meal with some friends, and that lovely meal ends up being loads of drinks, loads of bottles of wine, amaretto sours, getting home at whatever time it was. And now I'm still jaded on Monday.
No, don't do it to me. Don't do this to me. It's like, Andrew, it's like when you are on a stag do and everyone is at the airport at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the stag do is effectively ruined for 2 days because everyone's absolutely bollocksed at the airport. And when they land in Ibiza at 11:30, no one can see. So don't do this to me. Tuesday is a better day because I am coming in hot. I'm coming in hot.
Are you guys feeling mobile though? Because last time I saw you, Goody, you couldn't walk. Last time I saw you, Jim, you were lying horizontal, peeing into a Nutribullet container.
Well, thanks for asking, Andrew. I'll go first. Lazarus, I'm back. The wife said to me, isn't it ironic that for the last 2 weeks you've been lying on your back when you've had to deal with the kids and you've had to do a number of stuff at the house, but now it's the week of the live show and you're out on your bike, you're bending down on the floor, picking up your bag to pack it, and you can put your socks on again, you can put your shoes on again. I said, well, it's important. I said, I can't turn up to the live show with no socks or shoes, so I've got to make sure that I can do it. So I'm back is effectively what I'm saying, but I'm just going to take it easy. You know what? I don't want to go nuts. I don't want to go nuts on Wednesday. I just want to lead into this new life, which we took for granted before all this happened, and just realise that I'm happy. I'm happy to be there, and I'm back.
How's Father's Day, lads?
Well, I didn't get what I wanted.
What? You didn't get a new back? You didn't get a new bike? You didn't get a Harley? You got your Harley t-shirt on, but what?
None of that.
What do you want?
And not material things, Andrew. Not peace and quiet. You know, a quiet coffee, a stroll through town, no screaming, no shouting, no moaning, no bickering, no tantrums. I got all of the things that I did, that I asked that I didn't want. Andrew, it wasn't as good as yours because I didn't put it up on Instagram. So when you put stuff up on Instagram, it's either absolutely shocking where you got to post something up and it kind of covers over all the cracks in one's life, or you just do what I do and silence, and that says it all.
It's funny, actually. When you are silent, I know you're grafting with the kids. So, to be fair, Father's Day for me, obviously it was on Sunday. My missus says, you can have your Father's Day on Saturday. You stay home all day. I'll take the kids out all day and you stay at home and watch the ruggers. So tip the slipper to the missus for that. And then what I didn't realise is I forgot we were going out Saturday night. Overindulged, some would say. And then Sunday, I had to battle through with the kids with a hangover. So,
what does battle through mean? So just tell me what Andy Goode has to do on a Sunday morning. I want to hear what battling in your life is.
Oh, well, I got out of bed at 9:30.
What, 9:30 in the morning on Sunday?
Yeah, 9:30 in the morning on Sunday. We got in late. Luckily, the mother-in-law, she stayed over and looked after the kids. They were up at about 8:30.
Where's the battle?
And then the mother-in-law went home and I said, really good plan, actually. I said to the missus, I said, kids love trampolining. Girls, do you want to go trampolining? They're like, yeah. So took them trampolining. And obviously I can't trampoline. So I sat there and watched them as the missus was having to bounce around with the kids on the trampoline. So I planned it quite well, to be fair. But screaming kids, I feel your pain on a Sunday with a hangover, being Father's Day. You do want a bit of peace and quiet. I got it on Saturday and then I got given it back in spades on Sunday.
I love how you call that a battle. Let's just leave it there. So a lion till 9:30 in the morning and trampolining. Oh gosh, it sounds awful.
Before we get into the Premiership semi-finals, we'll be running an end of season Rugby Pod Awards very soon. So if you have any category suggestions, just get in touch on social media via email or through our website. And we may well be talking about your suggestion on the pod in the coming weeks. Let's look into the semi-finals now then. Some humble pie for you, Jim.
For many people, not just me.
Jim, what did you say last week? Let's just rewind. You basically said it's ending here for Quins. It's 50 points to Bristol's. The dream's over. And you went hard at them, didn't you? And then Marla gets his helicopter out. 28-0 down after 27 minutes. Don Brent gets a try before half-time. They give him something special at half time. I don't know what was happening in that change room. And then they win. And what have you got to say to the millions of Quins listeners? We've lost a few, but what have you got to say to the millions of Quins listeners, Jim?
We did it. We bloody did it. When the chips were down, when our DOR leaves, when the media's against us, when everyone is laughing at us, 28 minutes into the game, our pants are pulled down, there's helicopters flying around everywhere, we're dejected and we're getting absolutely semied, we're getting absolutely peer-towed, Max Malins is flying all over the place, we are literally thinking to keep it under 100 points, and with all that adversity, we bloody pulled it back. And who saw that coming? So Andrew, hand on heart, if you wouldn't be able to feel your heart, hand on belly and feeling the contractions going in and out rapidly, can you tell me 28-0 that you think, well, no, I know what you think because you text me, but are you thinking Quins are going to peel this back?
Absolutely no chance. You know, we'll speak to Nick Evans in a bit and I'm sure they'll say there was belief in the camp. There has to be belief. Like when you're playing the game, there has to be. If you're a Quins fan, you're not looking at that going, yeah, I can definitely see us come back and winning this game, because Bristol in that opening half an hour it was probably the perfect performance, wasn't it? Literally the lines, the accuracy, the precision of pass. You know, you see Piatel waltzing through. He stepped about 14 players to get through the line for the first try. The first phase off the line-out move when Morahan ends up scoring. Everything was working perfectly for Bristol. You know, the tries that they were scoring, it was literally the complete performance, wasn't it? The perfect attacking performance. And to be fair to Quins, there was a couple of errors in there, but it was literally like there was nothing they could do. So anyone that believed that they could come back from that, no one could see it in world rugby. As a player, you'd say, yeah, I believe we could always bounce back and, you know, regroup and nick a try. But it was just ridiculous from Bristol. And then half-time came, whatever Nick Evans, Jerry Flannery, Adam Jones. I think Adam Jones, I heard he took his top off and said, look, lads, you know, this is how bad it could be. It ain't that bad yet. Let's get back out there. And all the boys were pumped. And
I heard he said to the lads, if we don't win this, someone's eating my belly button. That's what I heard coming out of the changing room.
And it was phenomenal, wasn't it? You know, you look at the instances that created it. Malins, who was wonderful throughout the game, he drops the high ball, goes straight into Dombrandt's hands. That gets them to 28-7. Dombrandt ain't even celebrating at that point. They're like, fucking hell, we're getting absolutely hosed here. It's a try just before half time, but it allowed them some belief. And then they score the try just after half time. There's the Bristol are playing out their own 22 and Chisholm scores as well. It just generates belief, doesn't it? So those two tries that were gifted to Quins just gave them belief. And then they just started, you know, they grew. And as people have said before, they grew a set, didn't they? And found out that actually, you know, they can compete with this Bristol team. They can make the breaks. Liner was brilliant.
What about the physicality on some of his shots?
Yeah.
Semi Randrandra, a couple of the breakdown shots. I don't want to be horrible to Mike Bram. He's obviously had an incredible career. But him being banned, giving that space up to Tyrone Green, I mean, you think with a name like Tyrone, you best be good. My word, that's what I mean. Some of the play, look, apologies where it's due. Humble pie. I've had this perception of Quins and the way they go about their business and the culture and stuff. Alex Anderson mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. You know, the whooping and hollering, the moaning, you know, all them kind of interactions. I saw something in that Quins team that I've never seen. That unity, but also at the end of the game, the emotion around Jerry Flannery, a man who's won everything under the sun for Munster.
Yeah.
I don't know any other team that would have come back from that in the way in which they did, to play into extra time. You know, Joe Marler playing as long as he did, you know, with a story that we heard that he had his kid or whatever the day before. You can only credit that. You can only credit the culture there that's been built in a short time. And we've seen it before. A new coach comes in, Alex Anderson, we've seen that sale, you get a spike. And I know you're closer to some of the Quins camp than I am, Andrew, but it goes a long way in terms of having that deep-rooted culture and whatever Nick Evans and that coaching team have done and making some big calls to let Mike Brown go, making some big calls and, you know, letting Rob Shaw go. Let's say it, one of the best games I've ever seen.
It was. And I think, you know, in defence of Mike Brown, he was actually playing... Brown was probably playing some of his best rugby before he got banned. So, you know, it's allowed an opportunity for Tyrone Green just to flourish at fullback. You know, he was playing on the wing as well. Liner's come back into the team. And, you know, now you're looking at it and going, actually, next year, those boys can play like that. Are we going to miss Mike Brown? At some point, everything has to come to an end, right? So Brownie's left. We know he's going to Newcastle. At some point, if he'd have stayed at Quins, he'd have had to have retired anyway, maybe in a year or two's time. So you need that progression. You know, you look at Dombrandt this year and how much he's come on. You know, I know Rob Shaw's left, you know, in the back row. Look at Kenningham, the way he's come in and just, you know, he's smashing ball. He's about 12 years old.
He reminds me the way that he was going into tackles of Jacques Berger. I'll be honest with you. The way that he was putting himself about for a tall, rangy seven, if he can carry on like that, my goodness me. My word, he was phenomenal.
So, I mean, as a club, you have to make these decisions. And, you know, I know there was a bit of back and forth around the Mike Brown thing where Brownie wants to finish his career here. They offered him contracts. Someone at the club, pretty senior, told me they offered him 4 contracts. And Mike Brown's gone out to the press and said, they didn't offer me a contract. But what they have done is found this collective ability to, you know, ultimate adversity. You're getting absolutely hosed by the top team. Pants around your ankles, skid marks on show. And I tweeted, someone go in there at half-time, pull the pants up because no one wants to see these skids. And someone listened, went in there, pulled the pants up, gave them some magic juice. Probably the fear of having to lick out Adam Jones's belly button, as Jim said, if they lost. And my goodness, what a second half it was. Extra time, Marler's tackle on Callum Sheedy when, you know, Marcus Smith comes and puts the pressure on when he's going for the drop goal. That goes over, it's night-nights. You know, with about 5 to go, they would have been 10 points up and Bristol had gone through. He steps him and then you're thinking, geez, Bristol could score a try here. Marler, 100 minutes in the tank and he's made a hell of a hit. And you're just thinking, you know, there is that graft inside the Quins boys now that there hasn't been previously. And a lot of the credit has to go to Billy Millard and the coaches who have galvanised this team. It's not a fluke they've gone on this run. They're playing a different brand of rugby from perhaps they did under Guzzi. And they all talked about their DNA. And you need not only your attacking DNA, you need some substance with it. And they didn't have the substance in the first half. They certainly had it in the second half and, you know, thoroughly deserved in the end to be in the final.
What about the high tackle at the end of the game on Piattown?
Yeah.
I'm not bringing the mood down because I think this will maybe lead on to some instances in the other game and Rob Baxter's comments and stuff that came out of the Exeter Sale match and the weeks gone by. I don't think it would have made a difference. Bristol's were out on their feet. You know, Harry Thacker, the poor lad, had double cramp in both his hamstrings, both his quads, both his calves. Imagine that. He was like, I'm done. Like, you know, put me down. I'm done. You know? And I don't think Bristol's looked absolutely fucked at the end. So I don't think it would have had any outcome personally. But there's been a huge shift, right, in the referees, the way that they're looking at things. I actually thought it was a red card. I know the guys on commentary thought it was a red, and I don't want it. You know, the way that Quinns came back, I'm happy that they won. I wanted them to win. We're going all the way.
I love the bandwagon, Jim. You just flipped to someone else, don't you? I can't believe you're actually on here saying you're a Quinns fan and we about you and Harlequins.
It's the Harlequins, mate. We're the Harlequins. But but if Andy Rowe's not going to ask you the hard question, I'm going to ask you. High tackle, yes or no?
Yeah, I thought it was a high tackle. There's one shot of him where you think it's shoulders to head. It's certainly high. But I'm with you. I don't think that Bristol had anything left in the tank to go and win the game. I think they were down to 13 at the end, weren't they? So they were having to go from 88 metres out. But you can then argue that he kicked that penalty into touch and then perhaps got a penalty from a driving maul or something. Who knows? But does that change the result? I don't think so. It's definitely a high shot. And, you know, there are ones that Jim mentioned. Worst one, and I'll come to it later, was in the Super Rugby final. Ash Dixon. He gets a yellow card and absolutely smashes Orteri Black in the face.
I'm going to top here. Roman Intermax. Have you
seen...
Well,
that's a red. He's got a red for it, hasn't he? So...
Wow, did you hear them on... And I'm multilingual. They were talking Carte de Jean. Like, yeah. that line was in the framework of what they were saying, a carte de Jean. And for the multilingual people out there, that is a card of yellow.
In French, Jim, just to let you know, they actually say carton Jean.
Okay, well, so cartons of Jean, like it's the same thing.
You said carte de Jean, but yeah, I get you.
That is one of the worst tackles I've ever seen. And they were talking cartons and Jeans.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's the inconsistency of some are red, some are yellow, some are nothing. Anyone that's going up into a tackle now that's really upright, to me, it's a minimum yellow. And I think, Luke Northmore was very lucky, but I still think Quinns would have won the game if he's gone off for a yellow either way.
Well, it was an epic comeback from Quinns, and we can have a chat now ahead of the finals this weekend with one of the men who masterminded it. Quinns coach Nick Evans joins us. How are you, mate?
I'm good, Mandy, mate. How are you?
Good, good.
Nick, we were just chatting just before you came on. We've done it, haven't we? Look at us. We are now in the final. I just wish I was there. I wish I was there to celebrate.
Are we actually talking about Quinns on the show, are we?
We're talking you up an absolute storm. I'm happy to eat humble pie, and you wouldn't have heard us speak about it when you listen to it back because you're not that busy this week. You'll hear the glowing report that we've spoken about. And look, I've spoken about it before, Nick, and I'm quite happy to put it out there that things haven't seemed right at Quinns before. There's obviously been good parts where you've played really well and then you've not backed it up. For me personally, again, it's easy to sit there and watch a game of rugby and in hindsight, to go 28-0 down, right? There ain't any other team that's coming back. The way that you lads did that, and then we'll talk about the emotion after the game, and then the raw emotion from guys like Gerry Flannery, who's been around the block, he's won unbelievable trophies, he's been in fantastic teams. That's enough to show a denier like myself how good things are at Quinns. I mean, how have you done that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Jerry's a brilliant one because this is a totally new experience for him. Coming from Munster, different environment, and to come to Quinns and kind of the way we do things is a little bit different. And you saw the emotion. I even think there was a tear from him there at the end as well. So it's hard to put into words, mate. Really, I mean, I think I had to do the mid-half talk, and I think we were 21 points down after 20 minutes. And to be fair, they said that you were shell-shocked, and I said, I think we were a little bit. You have to give credit to Bristol. They were out unbelievable in that first kind of 20, 28 minutes, and we just had to hang in there, and those were the messages, and things just weren't going our way. But I think with this group and just the environment that we have now, a belief, and having gone through, games prior to that, the Wasps game, the Irish game, these little things help you in moments like that. And I think the halftime was the big one. And I'm not sure, like, if you know, but they at Bristol, they send the coaches, our away coaches, right at the top. So we're with the nosebleeds. So it takes us about 5 minutes to almost get down to the room. When we got to the room at halftime, the players had spoken, and I think Joe said it. He said, look, we know we can come back. If there's anyone that doesn't think we can come back, you may as well get out of the room now. And everyone stayed. And I think that kind of just, in his own way, kind of released a little bit of the tension. We added a little bit, and we just said, look, you know, that try just before halftime was crucial for us. We just said, we have to score next. We just have to build an innings, gave a few little tactical things that we need to address. And then once you saw we got the momentum back, you know, we're a hard team to stop when we have that kind of momentum.
I was going to say, have you been in to see Laurie Dalrymple this morning and said, mate, it was my wisdom at halftime. I need a 3-year contract. It starts with a 5 or a 6 and a massive pay rise. Or was it what we believe it was the threat? Adam Jones got his belly button out and said, if we're losing this game, someone's licking my belly button. Which one was it? I can't work it out.
Poor old Bob was having a heart attack. He was having kittens. You know, Jerry was going quiet, which is just nothing. I was standing up. I didn't really know what to do. I mean, and this is a young coaching group. You know, Charlie's there as well. And, you know, this is all new experience for us. And it's kind of the excitement about it as well. You know, we kind of just react to what we're seeing. We don't have this experience of a semi-final game, and the group doesn't have that experience. You know, we've got some great leaders in there, you know, guys that have been there, you know, obviously played in this, but this is a new group that's been together. You know, young guys like Marcus and Alex Dombrandt, they haven't been in these situations before. So, you know, they're a little bit like deer in the headlights there, and it needed, you know, a Joe and a Danny and a Steph Louise to stand up and just calm them down a little bit. And we were calm. We just gave little bits of this here and there, and then just said, just go out and just be true to us, true to what we are. There's no point hiding away from it. We're 28 points or 28-5 down, boys. You know, we just need to get back into it, and we can only do it the way we can. So, and it was important, you know, 90 seconds after the restart, we score.
Yeah, you mentioned Joe Marler and his words at halftime. And Joe's one of them guys where he divides opinion, right? But there's no doubt, and it's undeniable, how good a rugby player he is, right? Not just in the scrum, not just how long he stayed on the pitch for, but only came out recently. Didn't he fly in a chopper? Who sanctioned that? Whose idea was that? And I mean, it's quite a risky thing to do, isn't it? I mean, he obviously shows how important, but I mean, maybe a few lines on his performance and, you know, how much it means to him to be a Harlequin, and obviously how good he was to stay on as well.
I've got the utmost respect for Joe. You know, I've been honoured to play with him and now be on the other side of it. And, you know, he's a fantastic bloke. And be honest, it was a tough week for him. You know, his wife Daisy, lover wife Daisy, and he's got three kids and he's got one on the way, and we're not sure when it's going to come. And, you know, so there's a lot of emotion that's going around that. And it was important that we let Joe, you know, be where he needed to be during that week. And he was brilliant throughout the week. You know, he was there when he needed to be there, and he was at home when he needed to be at home, which is really, really important. And I think, you know, it was an easy decision to make sure that, you know, for him and the right state that he needed to be in for his, and especially for his family, that if this was the way to do it, to chop him down on the day, then that was the way that we needed to do it. And, you know, we fully made sure that we got that in place. And Annie Sanger, sorry, our welfare manager, was a massive, massive help and part of that. You know, he dealt with that along with Graham and Billy. And and Joe came down and put in, arguably one of the best props performances ever.
And just looking at the overall game, Nick, it's, you know, coming back from where you came back from, it's the biggest comeback in Premiership history, and it was a semi-final. You've been involved in some unbelievable games for Quins over your time since coming over as a player. You think back to the Stade Français game at the Stoop, you think back to winning the Premiership and also the winning the Challenge Cup as well. You've been involved in some unbelievable moments for that club. Where does Saturday sit?
No, nothing's been like that, mate, to be honest, for me. We were talking to Adam Jones, and he's been in probably 200 more games than I've been in, and high profile games, and he hasn't been in a game like that before ever. And I think, like you say there, emotionally, you know, we were on such a high. And even on the bus trip back, I think it was this morning, we came in and we're probably just getting on the back end of it. You know, we're still kind of on that bit of a down, because you keep seeing, you keep hearing about it. You know, you get the text messages, everyone starts coming out of the woodwork, and which is great. And that's all part of it, and it should be. But we also know we've got a big game coming up this Saturday, and it's important that this week is all about, one, getting the boys' bodies right, because we played 105 minutes of rugby. So that's priority number one. But two, making sure we get the emotions right, because there is going to be a natural big come down from that. And it's then making sure that we don't just try and get them back up really quickly on the Tuesday or the Wednesday. It's got to be a real tapered emotional kind of week for us. So, but for me, mate, it was just kind of shock. You know, I think we're having a bit of a laugh about it. I think the coaches were looking at it going, this could be 50 lads. And then the boys are at halftime going, really? Like, can we like, and you know, it's good to have a bit of a laugh about it. But collectively, when we got onto task and did what we needed to do, and you look at some of the performances, you know, Wilco Lowe tackling Monaghan in the corner, you know, Lewis Liner tackling Sheedy, you know, when they went for the drop kick, you know, Marla coming across and little things like that. And then our try disallowed, you know, Dom Brett goes close in the corner, the emotional roller coaster of that. And then going into an extra time that's never happened before, I think, in the semi-final, to not really kind of sure how this is going to play out, and guys all over the place. So yeah, it's something that I've never really been involved with before. I do miss playing, but seeing some of those boys after 104 minutes, except for Joe Marchand, who looks like he'd just come off the tennis court for about 10 minutes, it's ridiculous. But yeah.
Couple of beers on the way back?
Definitely. This is the world we live in now. You know, it's you know, let's go back 5 or 10 years back in your guys' day, or our day, I could say. I'm not that young. You know, we would have torn right into it, but you know, it's COVID now. You can see just what's happening, I think, on the news with English football. You know, a couple of guys been in contact with Scottish boys and someone tested positive. So yeah, look, we enjoyed the bus trip back, and that was really important as well. And then we're just going to look forward and get excited for this week.
Yeah. What's been the shift, Nick, at Quinns? Obviously Guzzy going there, we spoke about in the podcast, like we do the headline things. I work with him at Saracens, obviously a massive story going there, bringing the Wolfpack. And there was a spike in terms of how Quinns played at the beginning. Whatever happened with Guzzy's happened, and then you're kind of left to hold the reins. We saw at Wasps when Dai Young left, and they had a spike in terms of their performances last year as well. But again, I sound like a right fucking hypocrite when I talk about it.
I am happy to say I am,
but I look at the weekend, but just the way you went about your business, but also the young lads as well, like Jack Kenningham comes in, never heard of the bloke. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Seen a little bit in the lead up, and I think it shows you everything by the way that he played, the way that he put himself in the way of oncoming traffic, and the way that he was tackling Lewis Liner as well. We mentioned Tyrone Green. What's changed since you've taken the reins?
Yeah, look, I think a lot of things, Jim. I think it's hard to put it on one thing. I think, you know, obviously there's going to be a natural bit of a spike when someone goes, and then when someone obviously comes as well. So I think, again, if I go back to Andy Sanger, you know, he's ex-military. He said, I remember the day when Guzzy left, he gave him a great speech about some of the personal stuff he went through about sometimes in war, you know, something you lose a mate or something, you've got to put a line in the sand, and either you just cower away or you move forward and everyone takes accountability for it. And that was something we all did as players and staff, you know, for Guzzy going. I think that was a big shift for us just moving forward. And then we just kind of tapped back into the DNA, obviously, from when I first came over, of what the club was about. And this wasn't just us as coaches or medical or anything. It was a combined effort, you know, the players as well, senior players, or the whole playing group, and just went back to get easy wins. You know, we adjusted training a little bit. And actually, it's funny, going to the semi-final, like all the narratives was, we can't do it, you know, like they can't do it. Yeah, they score tries, but they leak this, and Bristol aren't going to let them score 7 tries. Well, it's like, well, hang on, why not? You know, like, we win the first few games after Guzzy left, and everyone's like, oh, they won't be able to keep it up. They'll come up against, you know, big teams that do this and teams that do that. And then...
Who are,
you know,
these idiots?
Yeah, yeah. It's true. And, you know, like I don't listen to all these things, but people tell me this stuff. But you kind of go, well, actually, you just start building something, and you start, you know, you're working on the environment in the background, and this kind of freedom talk. But it's just a collaborative approach to trying to play the game that we know we can play. And, you know, I go back to kind of what I do in coaching and, you know, coaching through relationships. And man, I try and have meetings where I don't talk and try and let these guys kind of come up with it. You know, I try and let these guys coach themselves a little bit, you know, like the game's different from when I was coaching. I've got so much knowledge, but it's a knowledge from a game that I played, not a game that they're in now. You know, these guys, Marcus Smith, Danny Kerr, Alex Dombrat, they're in a game. They feel the game the way it is. So, you know, I need to be direct when I need to be direct with systems and structures, but you know, I need to be supportive. I need to have advice. I need to shut up. You know, like some meetings, I just want to sit there and not say anything and let them problem solve and come up with things, because that's what they do in the field. So, yeah, look, we don't get things right all the time, and you know, the players don't get things right up all the time. But you know, we're just trying to play a style that suits us, and we'll keep adding to it. And at the moment, you know, we're getting some great results and everyone's buying in. And and most important, we're just enjoying what we're doing.
And you look at the spine of the team that you just mentioned there, the 8-9-10 axis. Obviously, Dom Brandt, Danny Kerr and Marcus Smith. I've been so impressed with Marcus Smith this season. Not that I wasn't last year, because he's burst on the scene and he's an incredibly talented individual. And you see these players come and go, don't you, with a ridiculous amount of talent. But he's now got the maturity. He's still about 16 in nappies and stuff, but he's got the maturity of a 30-year-old that's played 100, 200, 300 games of understanding, yes, when to press the button and go, but also when to control a game as well. And he's obviously learning a hell of a lot of you. There's a lot of Nick Evans traits that I see in him as well when he plays. How proud are you of his development? How far has he got to go still? And hopefully, we're going to see him play for England this summer, aren't we?
Yeah, 100%. I think he's done amazingly well. You know, I think when he first arrived, being thrust into the kind of pressure cooker, you know, with Dimitri getting his throat injury, you know, he had to play, and he's played over 100 games now, you know. Yeah. The kid's only been, you know, starting for 2 or 3 years. So, and I think you add the experience in around him at the moment with Danny, you know, of Andre that's been around, even though he hasn't been playing, but he's been in and around, and obviously Brownie when he was there, and Joe and Steph. So the world's his oyster, mate. You know, I can't really see a ceiling at the moment because of his exponential growth in terms of his ability, and attack-wise, he's on another planet. And well, the great thing about him, he's got great self-awareness. He knows the areas of the game that he has to improve. He knows that when he came from school rugby, he can't just run around the halfway and look for a break all the time like he did in under-18s or school rugby. You know, you do that against Saris or Sale, you get in trouble, and the next thing you know, you're defending him all 5 metres out. So, you know, game management, the things that probably people don't see on Instagram, you know, like game management, play calling, you know, energy conservation of the forwards, you know, how to manipulate defences through our shape when we need to have shape, when we don't need shape, what do we do, and that kind of stuff. So, I think that stuff now is, I've seen a massive growth, and mate, he's just such a thirst for information. He's so coachable. He's driven. He wants to win at everything. You come up with a game or a drill, and the first thing he's trying to work out how to win it, and you got to think of another bloody one because that doesn't work anymore because he's figured that out. So, and it's brilliant. So I think he should be playing for England this summer tour coming up. But obviously, you know, first and foremost, he wants to win a premiership.
There's been comparisons with him and Dan Carter. How far do you think he could go? Could he get that good?
I think it's hard to tell, mate. I think the kid's, 21, 22, so there's a long scope to go. You know, I didn't even play professional rugby yet at 21, 22. So, you know, as I said, like, the ceiling's so high for him. I kind of like him to Richie Mwanga, actually, you know, him coming through. Yeah. You know, I see a lot of him and Richie, a lot of Richie and him, and just the ability to play within a system now and understands, you know, he understands our identity, how we want to play, the DNA of the club. He's got that now, and now it's just ability to play within that, but still have the instinctiveness to play what he sees, which is what rugby is all about, you know. Like, so I think that's one super strength of Richie, and I'm seeing that in Marcus as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm just listening to you lads talk about him. I spoke to Warren Gatland a couple of weeks ago. I don't know how. I was doing an interview with him for the British and Irish Lions.
You're still trying to get on that, are you?
I know, exactly. It's all done.
Embarrassing, Jim.
Well, I think in 2013, when I gave away 9 penalties in 8 minutes in that game in Hong Kong, probably that was the nail in the coffin.
Hell of a trip that was.
It was, I'll tell you what, it made me into the man that I am today. But it was interesting because I was just chatting to him about different players. We were talking about different tens. We were talking about Sam Simmons being picked for the Lions and not playing for England. And then he brought up Marcus Smith. He was like, look, you've got a lad playing at Harlequins who he thinks will be the next England 10 for the next 6 or 7 years. It sounded as if he weren't that far away from the Lions from what Gatland was saying. He was that big a fan. If Gatland says he's good, then he must be good.
Yeah, yeah, and that's awesome because it just shows the growth of him and also like the excitement of the future. And again, I guess you go back because it's very easy, you know, us talking about it and all these people writing up these things as they should because he's had a hell of a season. The ability to know, and as I said, this is where his self-awareness comes in. He knows what areas of the game he needs to work on. He knows what he's good at. He knows how to keep improving that. And we just keep working on it. And look, it's not just me, you know, working with him, you know, all the coaching group work with him, you know, Jerry on defense, you know, he's got a great support network outside of rugby. You know, his family's really close to him. His brothers are brilliant. You know, I'm sure he's got like, I think he's still, you know, in touch with Johnny Wilkinson. So like, I think he almost sometimes gets too much information, but you know, he's got such a thirst from improvement. You know, that the kids, you know, he's just growing and growing. So yeah, look, he's fun to work with. And it's great to watch him do his stuff when he's on form.
Mate, if he needs my number, I can teach him everything not to do, because that's what I did all
life
the time.
Skills. Life skills. Yeah.
Don't drink like I did. Let's look forward to this weekend then. Obviously, Exeter, it's their sixth final on the spin, which is a phenomenal achievement. And you know, a lot of people will probably be predicting that they're the favourites. One, are you happy with that as a Quins fan? You're happy to fly kind of under the radar. You don't want anyone else saying that you're definitely going to win it. And two, how do you attack this Exeter team? Do you change much up? Is it a completely different focus because they're a forward-orientated, you know, pick-and-go game, the driving maul? You've got to change a few things, but stick to your own DNA, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think we wouldn't be true to ourselves if we looked to change kind of the whole package, so to speak. So, look, I think let's be honest, like Exeter are unbelievable. You know, I'm in awe of some of the stuff that they do. You know, they're well coached. You know, Rob, Ellie, and Julie are doing an amazing job. They lead kind of the premiership in their coaching. Their squad is fantastic. You know, some of their players, I've really enjoyed watching them from. You know, almost, I know I'm against them, but watching them come through where they've come from to where they are now, you know, it's fantastic to see that. And they've got big game experience. So we know a few areas that we need to make sure, you know, obviously you just alluded to it there around their forwards, you know, they're a very powerful side. And, you know, you let them into your 22, it's pretty hard to stop them coming away with points. So, you know, our discipline is going to be crucial. You know, we've got to make sure that the physical side of it on both sides of the ball is going to be a massive step up. But look, you know, like we've done our analysis, you know, we think there's a few opportunities for us that we can, you know, have a go at them and look to make it a really good game. But look, I think it's going to be fantastic. You know, two good sides going at each other, maybe a little bit of a contrast in styles, but that's what it's all about. And, you know, we'll go there like we did last week. Be true to ourselves, go there and give it a crack. You know, one thing we talked about last week was no regrets, and it'll be the same message this week as well.
All right, Nick, thank you very much for coming on the show, mate. It was class, and best of luck for this weekend.
No worries, guys. Have a great one.
Cheers, Snapper.
Cheers,
thanks,
Nick.
Mate.
Top cheers, man. Boys. We can do it.
Cheers,
we've
good,
got
good
this.
Luck, okay? Good luck.
See you, lads.
Cheers, buddy.
Sweat. You mean armpit tears of weakness brought about by poor deodorant choices? Say goodbye to that salty river that floweth from your underarm with Old Spice Swagger Antiperspirant. Made for 24/7 sweat protection with daily use and an undeniable smell of cedarwood and lime. Giving you the confidence you need to quit your job, move to a remote island, and spend your days frolicking with dolphins. Old Spice Swagger Antiperspirant. Shop Old Spice now.
Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot, you can get up to $2,300 off select kitchen packages from top brands like GE Profile. That means you can save on a new GE Profile smart quad door refrigerator that's full of convenient features like a dual dispense autofill pitcher and an ice dispenser with up to 12.5 pounds capacity. Bring convenience to your kitchen with smart, innovative appliances from GE Profile. Right now, save up to $2,300 on select kitchen packages with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Top lad.
Yeah.
What a lad.
Yeah, he really is.
Legend.
He really is, Snapper. Mate, I obviously played against him a few times and he was such a good lad playing against him. What a bloke to listen to, though, about coaching. Yeah, that transition from, especially being at, you see how hard it is for some players that play at a club for so long, then go into the coaching team and that transition. But I could listen to him all day. What a bloke.
I didn't think he was going to make it as a coach because in 2013, with the Barbarians, we were talking about doing a DSP, which is dummy scissors switch or something like that, or a pop ball. Yeah. And I was running this short line and he might have been a bit hungover. He said that he didn't want me to get the ball on the switch, and I was adamant that that's where the weak spot was against the Lions in Hong Kong. Like, I knew that they'd be tired in that, and he was adamant that he weren't going to give me the ball. And ever since then, I was like, this bloke ain't going to make it as a coach, because if he's thinking that not hitting me up on a short line is not going to benefit the team, then I don't know what fucking well. So,
well, Farrell did it as well. Nick Evans did. Just didn't give you the fucking ball, mate.
No. Farrell wouldn't hit me on a short line. Nick wouldn't hit me on a switch, for fuck's sake. So
it's the same thing. Just don't give Jim the ball is the motto.
Well, there we go. It was right.
You're such a bottle job, aren't you? Like, you give it all the big one on here, and then someone from Quinn's comes on, and Snapper's a great bloke. But you were like, we can do it, Nick. Nick, we can do it. Like, I'm a big Quinn's fan now. Who are you, Jim? I'm happy to say.
Are you James? Are you Jim? No. I was James then. I love Nick Evans, and I love Adam Jones, and I love Jerry Flannery. I'm not lying when I say that. I don't know. No, I've still there's still a bit of being my bonnet. I'm growing to the way that Joe Marler's conducting himself. He absolutely hoses the scrum at the weekend against Bristol's. One of the lads comes in to give him a pat on the head, and he pushes him away. He's like, I don't want to get patted. Leave me alone. Don't touch me. Clubs are built on culture, aren't they? And you look at all the people in charge of the very best clubs in that top four, and we've spoken to all of them, apart from Rob Baxter, who said he's going to come on if they win the Prem. They're all good blokes. And what I really like about it is when they're on BT Sport and there is this interaction, like, you hear them speak as the game's going on. Mm. And Nick Evans is, I mean, you know, you talk about lovely men and world-class players and now a top-class coach. There you go. That shows it, doesn't it? And you've got Jerry Flannery, who you only have to look at his career. You look at Adam Jones and say the same, and the emotion that they showed. You've got three fucking top blokes at the helm, and therefore it's going to filter through. And fair play. And I genuinely mean it, and I'm happy to eat humble pie.
The other guy that's going under the radar a bit, Billy Millard, who's sort of controlling everything without doing any of the coaching. He's a really good bloke as well at Quinn. So they've got Jordan Turner Hall there as well, and Charlie Mulcrane.
I saw Turner Hall was back running the water.
Yeah, they're doing some of the coaching as well. So they've got a team with a DNA in it. And hey, look, you know, you have a coaching team, and you know, you look back at the success stories. You know, Leicester back in the day, they're promoted from within. They get success. Exeter, you can see the same thing coming through. A lot of local lads, you know, building on that Exeter culture. And Quinns are doing the same within their coaching structure. You know, obviously Nick Evans has come through. Jordan Turner Hall's come back. Mulcrone played there. It's about knowing what your
Chris
DNA
Ashton's
is.
Chris Ashton's left.
Club. Mate, Ashy, I mean...
Poor bloke.
Here's the thing, right? Ashy, he played for Sale. He left Sale. He said they weren't playing the rugby he likes. Sale get to a semi-final and are absolutely flying. He leaves Arlequins because I don't know why.
Culture's not right. The culture weren't right.
Culture's not right. Arlequins gets the final. The common denominator, if you want to be shit, sign Chris Ashton. Worcester haven't won a game. I'm joking, Ashley, but yeah.
Harsh, but true.
Wow. And what about the other semi-final? Sale threatened to produce a comeback of their own, didn't they?
Very different game. And I don't know whether it's because all the excitement, and it led straight into that game. There was no build-up on TV. We didn't hear many interviews at all after the Quinn celebrations, like they just won the cup final.
they now, is it, Jim? Now we go on to another semi-final. It's they again.
Yeah, well, it's Nick Evans. Like, he's a mate of mine. And obviously, it is a bit of we and they. But it was a very different game. And first 20 minutes, three tries. Loads of talking points out of that game. Manu Tuilagi goes off with a yellow card. Capstick goes off.
Mate, that's a red.
100%. And the issue now for Manu, let's just talk about that, Lions tour. Now, out of that game, I think there's one man that's going to be picked up to go on the British and Irish Lions tour, and that's Jack Knoll. But, you know, if Manu gets cited for that, he'll get cited for that, won't he, Andrew?
In my opinion, it's a red. And the big reason he gave a yellow, because it's second, and it shouldn't make a difference. But I don't think Tom Foley wanted to give a red, even though he should have, because it's so early in the game and it's a semi-final. So he's just gone with, there's limited force there. Limited force. You know, Manu's come on the show, friend of the show, he'll know he's got it slightly wrong. And this is where you've got to be careful. You know, you need to take the line speed out sometimes as opposed to accelerating into a tackle, because that's where the danger comes. And yeah, I mean, that's to me, it's a stonewall red, isn't it? But that's where the inconsistencies lie. And you can see the frustration on Rob Baxter after the game, can't you?
You mentioned Jack Knoll there. Big surprise before the game with Rob Baxter leaving out Stuart Hogg and putting Knoll in there.
I reckon. And then I didn't know anything around it until after the game, where Rob Baxter mentioned that he dropped Hoggy he dropped him because his performance wasn't good enough the week before. And he wanted to get Jack Nowell in. And looking back on the game, was it the right decision? I thought Jack Nowell was absolutely phenomenal. But not to see Hoggy get on, like, personally, I was gutted for him. You know what I mean? Because I know how much it means to him. We see it every time he plays. But look, you know, Exeter, they know, you know, the coaches know the game of rugby a lot better than I do. But personally, I'm gutted for Hoggy. But if we're talking frankly, I thought Jack Nowell was absolutely phenomenal. And if anyone's going to be sponsored by Red Bull, it's him, innit. How high can that man jump?
It gives you wings, mate.
Well that's the line. Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it? You talk about Hoggy being dropped, and I heard he had a little niggle, and then actually Rob Baxter just confirmed. He said, no, he's dropped. And you look at the final this week, who are you dropping now? Because O'Flaherty played well. Alex Cuthbert, who's leaving, had his best game I've seen him play for a long time.
He was class, yeah.
And then Jack Nowell was, you know, had a worldy performance at fullback. So I love Hoggy. I'm in Jim's camp. You want to see him play. And, you know, he's the sort of guy, and Exeter will get this because middle of the Six Nations, he's still going back and giving everything for Exeter. You know, some players go back to their club. I did it myself. When I was at Brieve, went back, middle of the Six Nations, having to play for Brieve, away at Dax, and I'm like, I ain't even making a tackle, boys.
Where? Dax?
Yeah, Dax away it was, yeah.
I didn't
relegation
see it.
Battle. Yeah. But there's Hoggy going back and giving full beans. So he cares about it massively, and it'll hurt him, I think, hugely, to be dropped for the semi-final. I just wonder whether he's going to put him back in this weekend, and if he does, who's he dropping? The only one you probably could drop, Cuthbert, just because he's leaving, so that you don't have to deal with the feelings of next year. But then he was unbelievable at the weekend.
I don't think he'll change it.
No, I don't think he will. Don't think he will. But yeah, it's, you know, I think Sale will be very frustrated with two of the tries they conceded, which ultimately I think was a difference. One was the knock-on intercept in the first half where O'Flaherty scores. You know, off Slade's break. Slade picked it up, didn't he? And then stuck it into O'Flaherty. And the second one was, you know, they got themselves back to 5 points down or something, I think it was. And then Hammersley, I played with the Hammer at Newcastle. He's a lovely lad. I reckon I could have turned a bit quicker than that, and my ankle's fucked. So poor lad, he just got stuck, didn't he? And he's looking for the ball, and then Cuthbert, he tries to lean into Cuthbert, loses the collision off the ball, and Jack Nowell scores it. And you end up, when you look back at semi-finals, both semi-finals, you look back at them as the losing team, and you can pinpoint a few things. Big swings in the game were those two tries that Sale conceded, soft tries. Alex Anderson said it after the game that I've just described. And also for Bristol, who capitulated a bit in the second half, the two tries that they conceded were the Max Malin's high ball that he drops just before half-time. And then when they're playing in their own 22 and it goes completely wrong and Chisholm picks up and scores. And in semi-finals, you just can't do that.
We'll talk about the Lions later, but just while we're talking about Hoggy, every expert has nailed him on as their starting fullback. Have you guys noticed any concerns about his form?
Well, he's dyed his hair bright blonde, didn't he? Why? He looked so good in the Six Nations. It was thick. It was lush. He was playing well. He's dyed his hair blonde. He's tried to do the Phil Foden. No.
I don't want to be horrible here. And he did a really good deed for me this week. So Hoggy sent me a video message for the Cookmeister, Sir John Pennycook Cookie. AKA Koo, because he's half the man he used to be because he's lost loads of weight. He sent me a 60th birthday message to him. And naturally, whenever you see Hoggy, whenever I get a video of him, whenever I see him personally, you look straight for the head, don't you? You look straight for the head of hair. And on the video, he was thinning again. I've said it.
Oh, mate, why are you being horrible?
Yeah, it was. It is thinning slightly. So is there question marks around the lid? I'll leave it to the masses. I thought he's been going really well.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the Sale game the week before in maybe as much detail, and it's a massive ballsy call. It's a ballsy call because you look at that back three. O'Flaherty plays unbelievably every week. Alex Cuthbert is obviously off. Baxter mentioned they can't fit him into the salary cap. He's been injured for large parts of his Exeter career. Hoggy has been their star player, really. Mm. His appetite to want to play after the World Cup, in the final weeks of the Six Nations. So that commitment, week on week on week on week, captain in Scotland as we go into a Lions tour. And, you know, is Jack Noll going to get called up to the Lions off the back of that performance? I reckon he might, not just for that performance, but how good he is with ball in hand. But I still would say that Hoggy is the man in possession of that 15 jersey. But I don't know whether I'm blinkered by loyalty and love.
Well, no, I think you're right. You look at when they all get in camp, and you know, obviously we know the Lions are going to play this week against Japan, and probably Liam Williams will start at fullback in that game. There's then, what is the 5 games pre the first test for where they'll all get a shot. And listen, Hoggies, you don't lose your class overnight. You know, the old saying, class is permanent, form is temporary. And, you know, he might have had one bad game. I don't think Gats is going to look at that. He knows how to get the best out of Stuart Hogg. The one question mark around Hoggy is, don't think Gats has ever started him in a test match, has he? I still think he's favourite to start a fullback as it stands right now, just because he hasn't got picked for a club game. Albeit a big semi-final. I don't think that'll impact yet.
How do you guys see the final going?
Quins till we die, is it not?
Oh, no. Quins till we die, is it, Jim? Hey?
I feel bad because it's, if you're going based on everything you've seen, you got to go with Exeter, haven't you? You've got to go with Exeter. I don't know. It is a hard one to call because it's a one-off game. You look at the emotion after the semi-final from Quins, and it was like they just won the final. And I completely get it. I completely understand why. They've gone away from home to Ashton Gate, losing 28-0, and they've gone into extra time, and all the emotion around that, like, it would have taken a bit out of you. It would have taken a bit out of the whole team.
That tank is empty. That tank, come Saturday, 5 o'clock, whenever it was, they're having a few jars in the change room, but their tank was fully empty, wasn't it?
And you're up against a team like Exeter, who, albeit had 30 points scored against them by Sale, but are a lot tighter in terms of the way that they play. Do you know what I mean? It's a lot more structured. I think it's a really interesting final. I think I want Quins to go there and play. I want us to go there and just throw everything at it. And, you know, don't go into... Look, listen to me. Harlequins, listen to me. Don't go there and start kicking and doing all these things. Just play, big fellas. They've got the quality. Clearly, they have. To go down to Bristol's and win in the way in which they did, they've obviously got a decent shot at the weekend.
Jim, you've hugely disappointed all our Harlequins listeners there, because I got a numerous amount of messages over the weekend from Quins fans on social media saying Jim wrote the team talk for them by completely writing them off on the Rugby Pod last week.
Influence.
By the fact that you're now saying there's a chance, there's no chance.
I'm happy to say that they don't have a chance.
Stick your name on a scoreline and it will galvanise Harlequins, because your scoreline will probably be heavily in Exeter's favour.
The question should be, Andrew, the question should be, is who do you want to win?
Why are you being horrible, mate? We're impartial on the Rugby Pod here. Exeter, we're Chiefs.
we're fans, Exeter.
But it's like you go back to the World Cup 2019, and I don't want to bring it up again, but England, did they play their final by beating New Zealand in the semi-final and then a week later perhaps didn't turn up to a final? Can you see Harlequins doing that? Not in terms of how they're going to play, because I think they're just going to continue doing what they're doing. But Exeter, this is their 6th final on the spin. They did the double last year. They're used to these big knockout games. They've never lost a semi-final. Yeah, 6 on the spin. Never lost a semi-final since they've made them. And they've made 6 finals on the spin. You know, and they had their scare, I think, they had their scare round 22 of the Premiership when Sale nearly turned them over. They nearly lost the home semi-final. And you saw a very different team in this semi-final. The way they came out the blocks. And I think what they'll try and do to Harlequins very early on is do what they did to Sale, and they'll just try and blitz them. They know it'd be a really interesting set piece battle, actually, because that's where Exeter have a lot of power and they, you know, get a lot of penalties and advantage from that. And to be fair to Quins, Joe Marler probably scrummaging like the best loosehead in the world at the minute. Wilco Lowe as well, proper tired. So that battle's going to be interesting.
That was arguably the changing point of the weekend as well. Like Marler in the front row, having played 125 minutes, losing the front of his hair. Mohawk's now gone. He's got an extra kid with a helicopter coming into the game. His performance in the scrum, and they're good at line-out defence as well. And that's where Exeter, obviously the way they play, scrum penalties, line-out penalties, kick to the corner, and that's all she wrote. So from that perspective, Yes, but then also their discipline. If you remember, they went with this counter-rucking mentality against Bristol's and they were getting pinged off the park left, right and centre. You do that against Exeter, Sladey kicks it to his corner like he did against Saracens at the end of my career.
What a nudge that was.
He went out. That went out and never got picked up.
I was there, mate. It was a hell of a kick.
Yeah, I wasn't, but that's what I mean. That's the issue that you've got. Your discipline's got to be on point against Exeter, otherwise you are 100% losing the game.
Right, well, let's have a quick look at the Pro 14 as well, because it was the Rainbow Cup final at the weekend. Jim, your Benetton defeated the Bulls to take it out.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Not just
another way,
them.
Is it?
Well, 2 years ago, Andrew, I was there building up a documentary about the foundations of the club and how good they are. And Seb Negri and Marco Bortolami both said to me, this is the turning point. When I was there in the huddle, quote unquote, whether or not it's to do with me or not, I just remember them saying, when I'm in the huddle with them, in Italian, something about it being the turning point. You fast forward, a cup that was never going to unfold or materialise, ended up materialising. Benetton top the Northern Hemisphere for the Rainbow Cup. The Bulls top it as well. They come up to Italy, boiling hot heat. Stevie Ferris is there, sunburnt with Bobby Skinstad on Premier Sports. No one saw an absolute slipper incoming apart from the United colours of Benetton. They were united.
I see what you've done there.
So just tying it all in together, that's, you know, I just put the jigsaw together. But look, speaking frankly, huge. You know, for Kieran Crowley's last game, he's going upstairs at Italy, but he's done a fantastic job there. And I went there and there was some, and I tweeted it, some wicked people involved, they're grafters. Yeah, they haven't got many star names in the ranks in terms of world-class, world-renowned names, but it's not a fluke, because it's not a fluke to top the northern part of the Rainbow Cup and then to beat a South African team. Yes, the travel that they had to do and put in, but I thought it was class.
You remember when you were in that huddle at Benetton all those years ago, 2 years ago, and you thought they were saying this is the turning point? Are you sure they weren't saying Jim's a turncoat and he'll leave this huddle and then he'll bag us for a couple of years and then he'll try and claim that it was all him when they get the victory? Because in the Pro 14, they played 16, didn't win a game. Yet they've somehow turned it around.
But that's old news. That's old news.
Yeah, exactly. Somehow they've turned it round and they've, you know, finished top of the log in terms of the Northern Hemisphere and then absolutely battered the Bulls. I think the Bulls thought they were going to rock up. Yes, they left a few South Africans at home in terms of test match players, but I thought the way they looked, they were going to rock up and just dismantle Benetton. But it was their pants that got pulled down, wasn't it, James?
The Blues won the Super Rugby Trans-Tasman final at the weekend. And their CEO, Andrew Hoare, said that there's plans to create a Champions League-style global club competition with teams from the Southern Hemisphere, Europe, and potentially the USA and Japan. That's now underway. The talks are now underway. Can you guys see that happening? Do we even need something like that in rugby?
I don't think we need it right now. I think the Premiership is far too strong. There's been a revamp of the Pro 14 United Rugby Championship, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes with the South African teams now confirmed in it. I don't know if we need it. I'll be honest. I'll say it again. I think there's a need for global season, summer rugby potentially. I mean, they might need it more than us in the profile. I love the structure of the European Cup that we saw last year, Andrew. With the top 16, you convinced me, you were right. Obviously, how well Ealing did against Saracens, albeit not the score. But, you know, I think everything's all right in the Northern Hemisphere. The top 14's are ticking along.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, you rewind back a year and, you know, we were sat on this podcast and everyone was like, right, this is a great time to reset rugby and, you know, go with the global calendar. And we had Augustin Pichot coming on wanting to change things. They had Bill Beaumont who came on and he was a bit slower to change things. And it was, you know, everyone was making these fantastic noises around aligning the whole of world rugby with a structure, you know, from the club game to the international game where everything is aligned. And we're a year later, what the fuck's changed? Nothing's changed, has it? So, and what it is to me, genuinely, you look at the Super Rugby competition that we've seen, and we spoke about it over the last few weeks. Obviously, the South African teams have drifted away from that now, and they're joining the United Rugby Championship. The Kiwis are looking at it going, wait, we've just hosed all the Australian teams by about 50 points every week. We need some more competition. We need a slice of the pie up north because there's a decent competitions there. There's a bit of money and all this stuff. And again, it'll all boil down to, oh, there'll be, imagine the TV rights that will be sold. Just remember the European Super League football debacle that went on when five or six or seven or eight clubs said, yeah, we're having it. We're having all the cash. We've got everything. And then the fans went into uproar. I'm with Jim. Like, I don't mind the fact that you try and get a Super Rugby winner playing a European Champions Cup winner in a one-off game. But, you know, to have, how are you having a league when you've got to travel 100 years to get to New Zealand and COVID and quarantine? It's just not happening, is it? The fact that we're still in the game now and, you know, 14, 15 months down the line of the pandemic, and we've still got every club in the Premiership still alive, you know, same in Ireland, the same in Scotland, the same in Wales, and some of them by the skin of their teeth. But I don't think you need to try and chuck something else in there to change things up again. Where you're talking about a global club competition, it's basically going to be the top teams trying to cream everything off the top and the lesser teams will disappear. So yeah, I think it's a pipe dream. I think there's things to be looked at over the coming 5 or 10 years as USA rugby grows and the league there, and obviously the Japanese top league. But the reality of a global league like that is just crazy. Geographically, ain't going
to
happen.
We've got the Premiership final to come this weekend still, but the summer of international rugby is getting underway and Eddie Jones has added some Sale and Bristol players to his England squad. Good to see Manu back, guys.
Not if you're American or Canadian, no. But great if you're English. And even better news if you're Jacob Umunga, because you're in the shit, just give it Manu.
Harry Randall, Max Malins and Will Capon have been added from Bristol. You surprised that Piers O'Connor isn't in?
Yeah, I am a little bit, because he's been brilliant for Bristol, hasn't he? You know, playing 13, playing on the wing as well. And I'm surprised that he hasn't been given a shout. You've been nominated as one of the players of the season. He didn't win it, but he was on the shortlist for player of the season in the Premiership. So yeah, form dictates yes. Eddie Jones says no, and we've heard that before, haven't we?
The British and Irish Lions series gets underway this weekend as well, with the first warm-up game against Japan at Murrayfield. Are you guys excited? What are you expecting from this one?
I'm there. Is that what you're asking or not? Is that what you're asking? Are you bothered? Is anyone bothered?
I don't think you asked that, Jim, but I am looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to hearing about your day at the Lions test at Murrayfield.
I'm excited to watch it live. Now, I've spoken about it many times. 4 years ago, me and Andrew were in New Zealand. Didn't think it was going to be that good. It was absolutely unbelievable. So there's going to be some fans at BT Murrayfield, a lot of happy people, a lot of upset people who've missed out on tickets. So it's the start, it's here. There's been a huge build-up, hasn't there? I know they're not going to be at full noise because they've still got players to come back into the squad who'll be playing at the final. But nonetheless, it'll be class. I mean, it's a great opening game against Japan. Japan have been fantastic. Well, they were a couple of years ago. I've not seen much of them since. But this is it now. It's on like Donkey Kong. And, you know, looking at some of the kind of video clips that the Lions have been putting out, it'll be interesting to see what team they put out. Looks like Dan Biggeroo's going to be starting at 10. I think that's fairly obvious, to be fair, considering Faz was playing in the big one against Ealing, which was a close encounter. And obviously Finn as well was playing in the semi-final. Can't wait.
Yeah, it should be good. Should be really good. And it'll be interesting first hit out to see everyone starts to kind of look at combinations, don't they, around who's he going to play together, who's he going to end up picking in the test series. It's an opportunity. I think it'll be fairly comfy for the Lions. So exciting looking at some of the clips from Jersey. They look like they're having a good time. They're training hard, but also, you know, they're bonding together, playing a bit of golf and different things. So everyone, to a man, to a woman, to a child that supports the Lions, cannot wait for the game.
Shall we finish things off with the good, the bad and the ugly?
Oh, go on.
Yeah, go on then. Let's start off. And we're going to start off with a bit of a recap from last week. So in the good last week, I mentioned Beer Itz and Stefan Armitage slotting the winner of the Pro D 2 playoff game to get them promoted against their nearest and dearest rivals, Bayonne. However, I'm sticking Beer Itz back in the good this week. And specifically, one of our listeners, it's just the Beer Itz owner, Louis Vincent Gave. Louis Vincent Gave. What a bloke. Anyway, he's a long-time listener of the podcast. He messaged me last week on Instagram and he corrected me, said it wasn't a dog shit game. It's one of the best games he's ever seen, even though it was 6-6.
I'm sure it was, yeah.
But he's getting a mention in the good this week because as the owner of Beer Itz, after they won that game, what does he do? He gets a plane, flies the lad straight to Ibiza, doesn't he? What a legend of an owner. So Louis Vincent Gave. I've probably pronounced the surname wrong, but what a legend you are. What a hero. You get a mention in the good this week. Long-time listener, legendary club owner of Beer Itz.
Was he asking for me or not? Did he mention me?
He was. He said, Jim, it's not a stag do. Tell Jim it's not a stag do, but it's a celebration. And we're invited next year to go to Beer Ritz and get absolutely...
Eat steak.
At a game. Yeah. We'll go and eat some steak and have a few beers at a game. So looking forward to that. Even I found one French person that likes me, so I'm happy. What else was good? We'll go to New Zealand. We'll go to your country, Andy Rowe. The Blues, they beat the Highlanders 23-15 to win their first Super Rugby title for 18 years. Blake Gibbons' try in the dying embers sealed a deserved win at Eden Park. So well done to the Blues. That really hurt Andy Rowe because he's a Saders fan. What else was good? We'll leave there. We'll go over to France. Toulouse and La Rochelle both won the semi-finals of the top 14 to make the final and a repeat of the Champions Cup final. So tip the slipper to them. We always got to get one of my old clubs in the goo, don't we, Jim? We're going to give a mention to Saracens. I played for Saracens many, many moons ago. Promoted back to the Premiership with victory over Ealing. So welcome back to the Premiership. Make sure your books are in order because
Andrew,
all the boys are coming back.
You don't need to put that bit in. You can just say, well done.
Tip the slipper to Saracens.
Just be like, there we go. Just say that. That's all you need to say. And well done. Great group of people. Yeah, tip the slipper to them.
Tip the slipper. Just make sure the books are running fairly smoothly for next year. What else was good? Exeter through to their sixth straight final. A phenomenal achievement by them. Harlequins get a mention in the good, Jim. They don't win it this week, but they produced the biggest comeback in Premiership history in a semi-final against Semi, and they had a semi at the end of it as well. So massive tip of the slipper to Harlequins for winning that semi-final. We'll go over to the Sevens world and Ireland. Ireland Sevens and friend of the show, Greg O'Shea, qualified for the Olympics by beating France 28-19 in the final in Monaco. So imagine Greg O'Shea and his Instagram will be out in Tokyo for the Olympics, just loving life in the fans' village, being a celebrity. Just come on the pod, mate, again. We'll have him on. But the good this week goes to Benetton, winning the Rainbow Cup against the Bulls. Hell of a turnaround after not winning a game in the Pro 14 season, where they went 16 matches without victory.
Just leave that bit out. Leave that bit out and just say, well done.
It's such an upturn that that's why they get the goo. They didn't win a game in the Pro 14 season. They end up winning the Rainbow Cup by spanking the Bulls 35-8. Quality performance. And they've had mentions in the bad this year because they've been bad. But when they're good, my goodness, Benetton, they have got rid of all the skeletons of Jim Hamilton's trip over there. They've binned all that off. They've got rid of the negativity. They're now in a positive mindset and they're winning the Rainbow Cup. So tip of the slipper to Benetton. They get the good this week.
That's in Italian. Here in Italian.
The bad. Well, we'll start off in France and Racing. They lost the semi-final at the weekend to La Rochelle, but it's not just about losing semi-final. It's the way they lost it and the manner that they lost it that will hurt them. They had Finn Russell, Gael Fiku, Vakatawa, Teddy Thomas, Curtly Beale. They all played in the back line. Didn't even score a try, boys. They only kicked two penalties. So they could only muster 6 points. So they'll be very disappointed that they didn't fire a shot in a semi-final. That gets a mention the bad. What else gets a mention? Bristol's. Unfortunately, their second half capitulation, letting Harlequins back in the game with a couple of errors. They'll be kicking themselves today, I'm sure, with seeing that as a missed opportunity to try and win the Prem. So they get a mention the bad. The Bulls get a mention. Didn't rock up for a final. Was it overconfidence? They had their pants pulled down, so they're going to get a mention. But the bad this week, I'm just going to hang out some referees to dry. The inconsistency in refereeing the high tackles across the world. And we're seeing complaints. Rob Baxter's been out there complaining. Loads of people from the Southern Hemisphere. I'm basically aiming this one at the referee of the Super Rugby final who gave Ash Dixon a yellow card. All I'm going to do is I'm going to implore everyone to Google Ash Dixon's tackle on Terry Black. Clearest red card you've ever seen in your life. If we're trying to change the game to protect the players, it's got to be a red. Don't fly out the line and smash someone on the head. The inconsistency of referees, especially in New Zealand, you're getting the bad this week. And then the ugly, only one bit of ugly really, bar that tackle from Ash Dixon, which is ugly as well, so that gets a mention. But Jim mentioned it earlier, when you see this tackle, Olapano Suteni's hit on Roman Untermak, who got stretchered off, is just an absolute horror show. Suteni was out of control, flew out the line, slammed into his head, head on head, flying out of the tackle. You really hope that Roman Untermak's okay, but it was a really horrific tackle. One of the worst I've seen. So Suteni of Bordeaux, you get the ugly this week.
Error.
Thanks, Gertie. You guys have got a couple of shout-outs to finish off with, don't you?
Yeah, we got a few today. So the first one came through from Ben Gerry. Do you remember Ben Gero?
Went to school with him. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I was at Leicester with him in the back row, slash hooker. Fantastic player. Great lad. Love the chop. Live with Sam Vesti. Anyway, enough of them details and more about what they're doing. So yeah, he's doing a 100-mile cycle with an 8,500-foot climb. He wanted me to get that bit in there to obviously show how big the numbers are and how tough it's going to be.
He is hard.
And Snowdon on Friday, the 26th of June, to raise money for Community Action Nepal. There's around 40 people doing it this year. Former England Sevens international Nick Baxter is one of them. Apparently did it last year as well, and they did 117 miles because he took a wrong turn. So he's obviously very fit. So good luck to everyone. JustGiving.com/TeamMSS2021 if you want to show them some support. But yeah, good on you, lads. Good on you, Garrett.
Yeah, good luck with that. A big shout out to them and a shout out to some boys in Singapore who are taking on the West to East Challenge in a 10K vest on Friday, the 26th of June as well. They're running 58 kilometres in weight vests across Singapore, and with temperatures of around 30 degrees and 75% humidity, can you imagine the sweat? It's going to be absolutely brutal. They're trying to raise close to $100,000 for two amazing charities, the Motor Neurone Disease Association and Singapore Cancer Society. Ex-Harlequins back row Will Skinner and 15 other lads are doing the challenge. So just check out give.asia/campaign/theboys-tackle-west-to-east-SG if you want to help them out. What a challenge that is. I'd be weighing in with a 10K vest on top of my clothes.
150.
I'd be weighing in at 110 these days. Jeez, imagine the sweat.
Well, I'll be the judge of that when I see you on Wednesday. I can't wait. Yeah, so last shout out, and it's happening this weekend, actually, on the Friday and Saturday in the lead up to the Lions match at the weekend. There's a trek for Doddy. It's taking place across the borders, and they're coming up to Edinburgh for the game. A load of former internationals are trekking the 30 miles from Doddy Weir's farm, which is in the Scottish borders, to BT Murrayfield the day before. I've told the lads to probably leave 3 or 4 days before, but they're not listening to me. But look, it's all in the name of My Name's Doddy Foundation. We know the amazing stuff that they've done, the amazing people involved in that charity, which is obviously close to mine and your heart, Goody. So good luck to everyone. If you want to get behind that campaign, again, it's at justgivingpage.com/campaign Lions Trek for Doddy.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Gertie. Thanks, producer Tim. And thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube and head on over to Spotify, and we'll see you there.
I'm coming down, boys. It's the Rugby Spot.
Spot it, pod. See you on Wednesday.